This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. You are tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 a.m. And this is Priya. I'm in the studio with Leela. Good morning, Leela.
Good morning, Priya.
How's it going?
Well, pretty good. I was a bit shocked yesterday by the amount of rain that we had, to be honest.
Yeah, and it looks like it's only going to increase today, which I'm not looking forward to.
I don't know. I think there's something kind of like humbling about it. Look at me talking about the weather. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of love it, but it is a little bit inconvenient, especially if you're on wheels of any kind.
Oh, yes. And it is, you know, I think it's good that we're getting rain, but also, you know, this cycle, you know, we're in a La Nina cycle at the moment. And so I mean, as far as I understand, that means we're going to keep getting these sort of deluges, and then next week it's going to be really hot again.
Yeah,
and
I saw that.
Yeah, it's this kind of strange back and forth, and I guess as climate crisis continues to accelerate, we're only going to experience an intensification of these patterns. So get some waterproof gear, folks.
Yeah, I hope that the fresh waterways are enjoying all the rain, but I also am not 100% sure whether it's that healthy for them, but the creeks do look happy.
They do. They're extremely noisy. I can vouch for the Darabin Creek, at least. And we are bringing you, as usual, a packed show today, and we're going to start off with listening to some speeches and vox pops from the Australian Education Union teachers' strike, which was held outside of the Victorian Parliament on Tuesday, and teachers were basically calling the Victorian government out about being undervalued and underpaid and drawing attention to the state government's inability or disinterest in delivering a fair deal.
And after that, we are going to hear from Lily, a member of the Lift Collective and fundraising working group of Catalyst, who speaks with us about the progress on Catalyst Social Centre's new space and the fundraising to complete it, including an upcoming garage sale on Sunday, the 29th of March. Catalyst Social Centre is a radical community space located in Coburg on unceded Wurundjeri country, offering free meeting and event spaces for leftist and solidarity organising, free food and dinners and community activities. And Sunday's garage sale will be held at Catalyst's new site, 5 Munro Street in Coburg, and we'll include the donation details in our show notes today. On Tuesday last week, Equality Australia released a travel alert for the US, with particular warnings for people carrying Gender X passports and trans women seeking extraordinary ability visas. Amongst LGBTQ+ people, trans and gender diverse people are susceptible to increased risks when crossing international borders, whether that be for leisure or compulsory travel, such as work, immigration, or as a result of displacement. To understand more about the current travel risks for trans and gender diverse people globally, as well as recent changes to US border security protocol, we're joined today by Equality Australia Senior Advisor, Sav Chanchuran. Sav is a social justice practitioner and international human rights expert who has worked across government and civil society for over a decade with a focus on disability and gender consciousness.
After that, we'll be joined by Narm-based musician, DJ, writer, artist, educator, organizer, and my friend, Slumby, who's speaking with us about this Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance rally, which is going to be held outside the State Library of Victoria. So that is 4 p.m. on the 28th of March. And finally, we will be joined by Tilda Joy, who is the co-host of 3CR's Slacker radio show and amazing programmer and coordinator for this year's Trans Day of Audibility broadcast. And Tilda will join us to talk about the special broadcast, which is going to be running next Tuesday, the 31st of March from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., featuring 8 hours of exclusively trans, non-binary and gender diverse programming, exploring the best and worst of the transgender experience in the age of reaction. And to find out more about that, you can head to 3cr.org.au/TDOA2026. And we'll be having a little chat about segments, including my own. So stay tuned all the way through to 8:30 in the morning.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on Thursday Breakfast, and we will be bringing you the news headlines next.
Trans Day of Audibility returns to 3CR for its fifth year running. 8 hours of wall-to-wall transgender programming, featuring live music, lived experiences, and dispatches from the front line in the war against reaction. Tune in from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, the 31st of March. 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, 3cr.org.au, 3CR Digital.
You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. It is 7:06 in the morning, and these are the news headlines for Thursday, the 26th of March. First Nations listeners, please note that this first headline contains details of a First Nations person who has died in custody. A 25-year-old Aboriginal man died in custody in Darwin this week after struggling to breathe while restrained in the back of a police van. Police officers reportedly handcuffed and restrained the man in the police cage, noted his labored breathing, and were told an ambulance was not available. The man's death is now under investigation by the Northern Territory Police's Major Crime Section detectives, with oversight from the Professional Standards Command. Also in news this week, the United States and Israeli strikes on Iran continue to intensify, with a raid in southern Tehran killing at least 12 people and wounding 28, while further explosions destroyed a school and residential buildings amid ongoing bombardment. In Lebanon, escalating Israeli attacks have killed more than 1,000 people since early March, including 33 in the past 2 days, as fears grow of a wider ground invasion and mass displacement of Lebanese people continues. In Iraq, United States strikes killed 15 people, deepening regional instability and fueling retaliatory attacks by armed groups against U.S.-linked targets. Also in headlines, reports this week show Israel has not prosecuted a single Israeli citizen for killing Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since 2020, despite at least 1,100 murders, including of many children. Legal and human rights experts say this is a system that manufactures impunity for ongoing violence by settlers and security forces. Former Israeli officials, including former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, have denounced what they refer to as organized and state-backed ethnic cleansing. Rights groups warn that the Israeli government's failure to act on settler atrocities against Palestinians amounts to complicity in crimes against civilians and call for international prosecution. In other news this week, the new aged care algorithm introduced by the Albanese government in November continues to receive strong criticism after 800 older people sought reviews of their assessments, rising sharply from 178 in the previous year. Critics liken the system to robo-debt because assessors cannot override its decisions and warn the system is reducing standards of care. And finally, in headlines this week, a Senate inquiry has found that climate misinformation is fueling conflict and distorting public debate across the country, delaying renewable energy projects and undermining effective responses to the climate crisis. The inquiry report calls for stronger action, including holding tech companies accountable for psychosocial harms spread on their platforms, and calls to boost efforts to counter disinformation. These have been the news headlines for Thursday, the 26th of March, and you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it has just hit 7:10 in the morning. Now, Victorian teachers are the lowest funded and lowest paid in the country. And the Australian Education Union branch said that the state government has left them with, quote, no choice but to stop work, end quote. Now we bring you three speeches from AEU Victoria Deputy President Briley Stokes, Early Career Member Erica, and AEU Victoria President Justin Mullally at Parliament from Tuesday.
Union! Power! Union!
Power!
Union!
Power!
When public schools are under attack, what do we do? Stand up, fight back. What do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
We're here at this point of Victoria because the building behind us holds some people that can make some decisions. And they've been making the wrong decisions. They've been making the wrong decisions. Those deliberate decisions have meant that teachers are the lowest paid in the country. Public school ES are undervalued. School leaders are undervalued. And if that wasn't bad enough, the deliberate decision to make Victorian public schools the lowest funded in the country. Shame. Shame. Because when our schools are underfunded, what happens? You all fill the gaps. You all work about 12 hours a week on average, unpaid overtime, so your students don't miss out. And we're here today to say enough is enough. Have a look around. But apparently all schools are open today, according to the government. Have a look around. How on earth can that be true? Also, people say to us, principals wouldn't come out. You've seen what's just happened. They have. People also say to us, oh, you know, new entrants to the profession. They don't understand union. They're not going to stand together. They're not going to come out. How many people here in their first 3 years? Look at that. That should make the Premier very uncomfortable because this is the next generation of unionists and they are here and standing up. So let's hear from one of them. Let's hear from Erica.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Erica and I am an early career teacher. I'm in my third year of teaching primary school, but like every other teacher here, I do not just teach. We care, we support, we guide, we listen, we show up every single day for every child in our care. We celebrate their wins, we sit with them in their struggles, we give our time, our energy, and often our own money, because that's what this job asks of us. And we give it freely, constantly, relentlessly. So I have to ask, why in the so-called education state are we so undervalued? Early career teachers are entering this profession full of passion, but without the support we need to stay. We are crying out for real mentoring, real support, so we don't burn out before we've even begun. We're working nights, weekends, holidays, because the job does not stop when the bell goes. We know that teachers in other states and territories are paid more, supported better, and valued more highly. What does that say about us? But this isn't just about me or my fellow teachers, education support, or leadership here today. I am also a mum, and this is about my daughter. In less than 2 years, she will walk into a public school classroom, and I know that she will be cared for because I see dedicated teachers in action around me every day. But I have to ask, why should her teachers be paid less and supported less than other states and territories? Why is my daughter and every Victorian child not worth the average $3,200 of funding each student would receive every year if our schools were fully funded? Is that acceptable in the education state? Because right now, that title is an empty political slogan rather than a reality. But here is what's real. We will keep showing up. We will keep fighting for our students, for our colleagues, for the future of public education. But we should not have to do it alone. It's time for the Victorian government to show up too. Our teachers, to fund schools properly, to invest in a future they claim they care about. Because we already do, and we're not going anywhere. So you've all turned up today, you've all given up a day's pay, you've all come out here to use your outside voices. So, people ask me, what comes next? They all keep asking, what are they saying?
What comes next?
Sorry?
What comes next?
Well, Justin's going to tell you what comes next.
Folks, let's make our voices really loud. There is a sensational placard over here. It says, time to use our outside voice. Are you ready to use your outside voice? Are you ready? Because what do we want? When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Now.
When do we want it?
Now.
I said your outside voice. What do we want?
Now.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Now.
When do we want it? Sound any better now?
Yeah.
We're going to leave a final message for the politicians, and it's about what we're going to do next if we have to. We're going to stop work again, folks, if we need to. Yeah. We're going to stop work over multiple weeks, on multiple days, on individual areas of the state, so that there is action going on for groups of members every day of the week, because that's how we build the pressure. That's how we put the pressure on the politicians if they don't come to the table. And I don't know if you know this, but the last time I checked, this is an election year. And in an election year, I would have thought, you'd think they know where their self-interest lies. Well, their self-interest lies in serving our interests, because what our interests are meeting the needs of the kids that we educate and support every day. So we're going to stop work, and there's no point having bans and limitations if you can't relieve a bit of workload in a school. So we're going to ban meetings, folks. We're going to ban meetings. We're going to ban any new department initiative. We're going to ban responding to departmental emails. And if we need to, and if we must, and if the government's inaction forces us to do it, because it will be on them, we're going to ban giving parents comments on reports. Because if we're going to be taken for granted, then we're not going to do the tens of hours that it takes to put those reports together. But we're going to make sure that children know how they're going, because we're going to assess their work, and we're going to provide feedback to them, because that's what they deserve. They don't deserve to cop it because of these useless politicians. Are you with me on all those actions, folks? We're going to escalate our campaign. Well, I tell you what, the government's got a choice, just like they had to make a choice before today. They could have put a deal on the table that was acceptable to us. They chose not to. Well, they get to choose again. Let's just see what they do. And if they don't do the right thing, then we'll be back. We'll be back better than ever. You guys are fantastic. Have a great afternoon. Make sure you do that MP action. We want every MP, every government MP, to feel the heat. And before you walk off, give yourselves a big round of applause. Well done.
You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and you just heard three of the speeches from the Victorians' teacher strike rally at Parliament on Tuesday. And now we are going to listen to some vox pops that were also recorded at that rally by the wonderful Annie McLaughlin.
I work at the Collingwood English Language School. We're an EAL school, multi-campus facility, and we deal with new arrival refugees.
And why is it important to be here with the AEU today, your union?
It's super important for us to be here to support all staff that are working with the school, especially our ES, whose pay is just disgusting. As a teacher, and have been teaching for 17 years, and I'm getting paid almost the same rate as a graduate in Queensland and New South Wales for the extra work and effort that we put in. It would be nice to get some of that support, especially demands have definitely risen with students from having a lot more diverse needs. Like I said, we work with new arrivals, not having the equipment that we need to support these students, not having the funding we need to support these students, the demands from reporting, the demands for face-to-face teaching, the demands for meetings, endless meetings.
Are you saying you've been working for 17 years in this system? Have you been seeing the public schooling system being depleted over that time?
100%. I'm seeing the demands from families being so much higher, the demands from the workplace higher, seeing student behaviour being incredibly difficult and getting worse, student behaviour getting worse, and not getting the support that we need as teachers just to sort of survive our day.
I mean, I've heard that this is the first time a lot of people have gone on strike. Is this your first experience of strike action?
No, this is my third.
Okay, so you are committed to this struggle.
100%. I think that if all of our voices are together and we stand as one, we can hopefully get the support needed to help the education. Like, Victoria's an education state, and I don't think we're supporting our students.
Have you actually seen other members of staff become aware that it's important to stand up in this way?
Out of our four campuses, just about every single campus is closed because we've got all our staff here.
I rode past a whole lot of schools getting here, and they're all closed too.
Yeah, it's fantastic that we can all have one voice and hopefully not have to strike again. The hope is that this will mean that we get some of the things that we've asked for.
Where are you from?
Oh, Kurrenjang Secondary College, out in Melton.
Okay, all right. And so this is the third industrial action that's been taken, isn't it?
The third. I'm not too sure.
Well, I spoke to somebody who had taken three, but they'd been working for 17 years, and so they're a committed unionist.
Oh, okay. Look, I go back 40 years. Okay. So I've seen a few more than that.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a long time since we've taken industrial action. I'm actually very proud at the moment to be part of the union to see the amount of support that's coming from younger teachers and the amount of commitment, because it was sadly lacking about 20 years ago. Ever since Kennett destroyed the union movement, basically importing secondhand Thatcherite kind of ideology.
Yeah, and also made teachers very insecure. Being a teacher was a very insecure job.
Oh yes, I came from a closed school. It's no longer there. Down at Dufton Secondary College. You'll find a couple of units there because it was basically torn down and sold during the basically the destruction of much of our state educational system back in the 90s. So it's a very different world we live in teaching these days, much more casualisation of the workforce. And that has meant, I think, you know, there's all this constant sense of maybe a bit of job insecurity at times and short-term contracts and such. So we've slid a lot in 20, 25 years. There's some improvements, certainly with the amount of things that we do with kids, but in many ways our conditions, I think, have gone backwards since the early 90s.
Do you have a view on the government support of private schools versus public schools?
There's only one way you can view that. It's just a complete unfairness, a complete nonsense. One only has to look at some of the private schools and see the facilities compared to what we have, with our holes in fences and our deteriorating hard court that's meant to be used for about three or four different sports. It's clear that there's a disparity. There's the haves and the have-nots, particularly out in the West.
Yeah, so you want the government to govern?
Well, I think we all do, don't we? We'd like to see negotiation, real discussions with educational groups and the government to try to bring about some lasting, sustainable improvement in schools. The state of our government schools is certainly disappointing.
You just heard a couple of vox pops from the massive Australian Education Union teachers' strike that was called by the AEU's Victorian branch outside Parliament on Tuesday, where teachers drew attention to being undervalued and underpaid and to the state government's inability or disinterest in delivering a fair deal. And those were some amazing vox pops with teachers at the rally, recorded by our very own Annie McLaughlin. And earlier you heard a couple of speeches from the rally by Deputy President of the AEU Victoria branch, Briley Stokes, early career member Erica, and AEU Victoria President Justin Mullally. Now, this rally saw 50,000 unionised teachers, support staff and principals from schools all over the state march from Trades Hall to Parliament, demanding fair pay and better conditions. And to find out more, visit aeuvic.asn.au. You're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it is 7:27 in the morning. I want to drop food, not bombs. Hot trains, bottles, give it every info shop. I want to give free therapy out in the park. Go to free school, just to have practice. Why drop food, not bombs? When I was new to Melbourne, I found a food, not bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter. Food Not
Bombs. 3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au. You're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. It is Thursday, the 26th of March, And we are now joined by Lily, a member of the LIFT Collective and fundraising working group of Catalyst, who's speaking with us about progress on Catalyst Social Center's new space and the fundraising that is being undertaken to complete it, which includes an upcoming garage sale on Sunday, the 29th of March. Now, Catalyst Social Center is a radical community space located in Coburg on unceded Wurundjeri country and offers free meeting and event spaces for leftist and solidarity organizing, free food and dinners, and community activities. And Sunday's garage sale is going to be held at Catalyst's new site at 5 Munro Street in Coburg. And we will have information in our show notes about how to donate to Catalyst Social Center's Fit Out fundraiser. But for now, good morning, Lily.
Hey, good morning, Priya.
Thanks very much for joining us. Now, I wanted to ask you to start off with about Catalyst's previous space on Sydney Road, because that had been operating since mid-2022 and it was really a hub for community organizing. And, you know, having been there for a variety of different things, it was a beautiful space and, you know, so many groups got a lot out of it. So I was wondering if you'd like to share any reflections on your time being involved in that space and what it's been like to leave the site.
The previous Catalyst Social Centre on Sydney Road was actually two buildings that were rented in sort of early 2022. And then there was a process of collectives coming together to say, how are we going to organise and run this space, and settled on a kind of federation model so that currently there's 13 collectives that all do really different independent stuff. So things like LASNET, the Latin American Solidarity Network, or Food Not Bombs, or there's also IRL, which have the Radical Library. So a lot of different sort of groups. They all kind of came together and decided on this model, which worked really well. So I feel like my reflections on the early stage of Catalyst was being involved with this sort of different political model that really facilitated decision-making and allowed for the space to be quite dynamic in the way that it was organised, sort of rather than having things concentrated in a small collective, which often leads to burnout. I felt like this model was quite exciting in the way that things were horizontally organised. And then the space started getting fitted out and people could book the space for events. And, yeah, over the years there was so many different events happened at Catalyst. There were some quite big sort of zine fairs where every different room. So at the front there was a big cafe, and out the back there was a kind of event space and a garden. And then the next building there was meeting rooms and a library. And, yeah, each one of those spaces was kind of full of people with tables with zines, and, yeah, the vibe was really going off, and there was a lot of different gigs. And just generally during the week, on a week-to-week basis, there was many, many days of the week people would have booked, or collectives would have booked, every single space in the building. So it was always quite active in there, and there was a lot of free dinners, and also the really, really free market would put on weekly food where they would have grocery food that was completely free for the public. Mm. And it was a really happening space. And towards the end, I mean, this is part of the problem of renting in our current rental market system. So they were going to knock down one of the buildings, and it was decided to close the other building and try and find a better space. Mm. So that was sort of the end of that Sydney Road.
Yeah, well, I mean, it had been such a special space, and also just like an opportunity to see how this autonomous and radical community space could be created under a federation structure. And I was wondering if you could talk about that, the significance of having a space like Catalyst, where, you know, it in so many places where people are able to gather in today's society, in NARM, require people to be, you know, have to pay to get in, are often quite securitized or surveilled, and don't really provide that sense of freedom and creativity and autonomy that I think Catalyst, you know, contributes. So could you talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that it's really important, these sort of autonomous radical community spaces, for the left to be organizing a movement that creates connections and networks across like the full spectrum of people involved in kind of leftist radical organizing. Basically it's really hard to do anything these days without having to pay a lot of money to go to an event or to go to a fitness movement class or to go to a dinner or a movie night, or, you know, so having a space that people can come and hang out in where there's not that kind of financial profit driving the space is really, really critical, because it also creates a model where we can see how that is possible in terms of the way that people can put energy and then get energy back out of that space in terms of organizing for the community and for themselves, and sort of self-autonomously organizing. So that's one of the other really nice things about it, is this federation structure. The decisions that are made that in through the federation meetings, which happen kind of once every 2 months or so, really relate to the bigger operating of the space, and in terms of like the values that are set about what sort of activities and events go on at Catalyst. And then the smaller decisions on like a kind of day-to-day, really trying to localize those down to that collective, they can be really autonomous and decide what they want to do. Is there part of the space that's been agreed that they're using? And so, yeah, it creates like lots of things can happen without, once again, it relying on like a couple of people to do something. And I think it's like a miniature little world of like what this could look like if it was scaled up in terms of like providing autonomous free spaces that people can collectively organize in a kind of like horizontal structure.
Yeah, I think about Catalyst as like a site for, or like as a prefigurative space, you know, like building the kind of world that we want to see in the present, because it is a site for organizing and for collectives to meet up and do, you know, political work, but also a site for people to be able to connect and relate to each other in a different way, which is a much slower process, but also something that is so vital, especially when, you know, we're seeing various crises converge and so many people just sort of struggling to respond to various attacks that are coming, but to have a space that can also be restorative and allow people to build long-term and sustained relationships is really vital. Tell us about this new space on Munro Street. It looks like the process of fitting it out has been really exciting and pretty dynamic. What's that been like?
Yeah, so the new space on Munro Street is came about through some people in the community have bought, so someone's parents have bought the space, and then we're renting that space out. And so what that provides for Catalyst and for the community is the kind of longevity and sustainability. So sort of rather than having a landlord that's, you know, just a business or like, you know, that is subject to like they might suddenly be like, we're going to knock it down, we don't really care what you're doing. Like this provides a setup where we can fit out the space how we want to suit like the collectives and the community needs, and also have that kind of sustainability, because like projects like this, we've seen, you know, NAMM's had a long history of social, really exciting social centres like Loophole or Hop or Hotshot. You know, Black Spark was such a beautiful space as well. That was another one that's sadly finished up. But, yeah, this being able to kind of be, settle in and be like, we could have this space for, like, the next 10, 15 years is really, really exciting. But yeah, it is still that we are paying off the rent to pay off that mortgage over a long time. And so this requires, like money and fundraising. So immediately right now, what's happening is that we're in a process of, we've made a kind of floor plan of where different things are going to go. So it's a two-story building. It's got a big car park out the front. That car park's going to have some really nice community gardens in there, like with raised beds. And then you'll go in, there's a big event space. And the IRL Radical Library will be at the back of that event space. It's got a much bigger space now up there. And then upstairs there will be, we're fitting out a large kind of movement and activity room, which it will allow kind of martial arts classes, dance classes, that sort of thing. There's some quite big bookable rooms for large meetings, as well as like a number of small offices up there as well. And so it used to be a bank offices, so it's being kind of converted. The plan at the moment, there's just some minimal works going on, but the plan is to get permits and kind of restructure a lot of the walls and that sort of thing and paint things. And then the next stage would be the sort of the vibe of the place. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're going to kind of, we're actually seeking as well, like for people to have input into that. You know, I think another point I'd maybe touch on about the Federation is that having a lot of different collectives, we're trying to also avoid being too subcultural, so trying to not pigeonhole the space into being sort of like one kind of subculture. An important part of that is getting a lot of input on how the sort of interior design, I guess, of the space is like also really important to making it kind of accessible to not just kind of a sort of subsection of the community. So there's actually a survey, that there's a link to the survey on the Chuffed fundraiser about the vibe or any comments people want to make about the previous catalyst and whether that space felt welcoming or how it could be different. So that's kind of the next stage, and putting up murals and nice things like that after the build.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the other big thing we're fundraising for is a place of assembly permit from the council. So this would allow us to hold kind of large-scale community events like zine fairs, festivals, convergences, like benefit shows, for Catalyst, but for anyone in, you know, in the community who wants to put something on, and, yeah, where we could have amplified music. So another advantage of this new site, it's like right near the kind of Coburg shops, and it's not directly next to any residential neighbours. So we've had an indication from the council that they'd be happy to support the application, but it costs about $10,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, yeah. It is so vital as well to be able to carve out and hold that space for such a variety of different activities. And just in wrapping up, can you tell people about how they can support the fundraiser, about the garage sale, and also if there are any non-financial options for people to support bringing the new space to life?
Yeah, definitely. So, with the fundraising, we have this online Chuffed fundraiser, so I think you might link to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's only got 3 days left, so... yeah, if you're keen to put in, now's the time. And, we then are also doing a series of, little event fundraisers in the next kind of month. So on Sunday we have a garage sale at the new site, so just out the front, because the inside's still being kind of fitted out. Hopefully the weather's good for us. And, yeah, that'll have, like, food, and people are bringing kind of stuff that they're getting rid of for the garage sale. So that's on Sunday at 5 Monroe Street from about 10 till 4. And then we're also going to have a big fundraising gig, like an event, a fiesta, that will be sometime in the first kind of week of May, so early May. So keep an eye out for that date and those advertising as that comes out for the for that. I'd also just mention that in addition to this kind of immediate fundraising for the new building, we also have the way that Catalyst works is that we have a subscription model for ongoing kind of funds. So very similar to the radio station subscription models where people sign up. It's on our website on catalystcentre.net under the subscribe page. And basically you can nominate any amount that you feel that you can afford. You know, it's hard financial times at the moment and things, but even like $10 or something, you know,
that's great.
Regular payment or whatever. And the idea with that is to help pay the rent in the long term and keep the space going in the long term. And so there's a few options. You can make a bank transfer or like a credit card subscription kind of thing.
Well, we'll chuck those details in our show notes as well. And then in terms of, if folks want to offer their skills or other non-financial contributions, what can they do?
Great. So heaps of ways to get involved if you want to do a non-financial contribution, of course. So quite a few of the collectives are open for members to join. Some of them are not so much open because they're doing really specific things that they organise and they're small collectives. But things like the Catalyst Really, Really Free Market, you know, they're really exciting group. They're kind of food rescue collective. So they do sort of mutual aid and food redistribution, and they have like weekly markets and from sort of 11:30-ish in the day. Like that used to be running on a Tuesday, I think, and a Wednesday or something. But going forward, that'll be running. That's still running at the new space just out the front. Food Not Bombs obviously is like always one that's really open to people joining. There's also the Cabbage Patch, which is like the garden collective, which is so cute. And various other ones, like there's the Lift Collective, which is like a fitness, health and training group. They do a lot of different classes and outdoor running groups and things. So once you get sort of like involved in one of the collectives, or you're coming along to various events at Catalyst, like each of those collectives is then involved in the federation structure. But there's a lot of ways to also just volunteer, particularly in this stage of like the building and so on. We're definitely looking for also anyone with kind of like DIY skills, but also anybody at all who would be keen to even just like make food, drop food around, like help with a bit of painting, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, nice.
We have on the chuffed, like you can email at hello@catalystcentre.net. And then there's ways to find out about how to come along to working bees and different things. There'll be a lot of working bees.
Okay. Well, I hope that people are ready to get involved. And thank you so much, Lily, for your time this morning. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having us on.
Of course. And that was Lily, who's a member of the Lift Collective and fundraising working group of Catalyst, speaking with us about progress on Catalyst Social Centre's new space and fundraising to complete it, which includes an upcoming garage sale on Sunday, the 29th of March. And as Lily mentioned, a fundraiser on Chuffed that is closing in a couple of days, which we will have links to in our show notes. You're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it is 7:48 in the morning.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our
marginalization intersect where we're both disabled. It doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
Staff liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo!
This is Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it has just hit 7:50. On Tuesday last week, Equality Australia released a travel alert for the US, with particular warnings for people carrying gender X passports and trans women seeking extraordinary ability visas. Amongst LGBTQ plus people, trans and gender diverse people are susceptible to increased risks when crossing international borders, whether that be for leisure or compulsory travel, such as work, immigration, or as a result of displacement. To understand more today, we are joined by Equality Australia Senior Advisor, Sav Tanchuran. Sav is a social justice practitioner and international human rights expert who has worked across government and civil society for over a decade with a focus on disability and gender consciousness. Good morning, Sav.
Good morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Now, first up, could you describe some of the things that increase the risk for trans and gender diverse people travelling internationally?
Well, anyone whose passport has an X gender marker, as a lot of countries don't recognise X gender markers, but also anyone who's updated their gender markers since birth, or perhaps you have different gender markers on your birth certificate and passport, and anybody whose gender expression doesn't necessarily align with the gender marker on their passport. There are also some countries in our region, like Malaysia, that directly criminalise gender expression. Obviously, it's less likely tourists will be prosecuted, but it's important to be aware of these laws.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we know, a lot of people here hold dual citizenship for these places. So, you know, you could be living in so-called Australia, but also be a citizen of Malaysia. And that too, I imagine, could increase your risk. In terms of the US, what are some of the key risks that have been flagged by Equality Australia when travelling there? And what might trans and gender diverse people expect going through customs and border security?
Well, people need to be really aware, first of all, there are really serious risks involved in travelling to the US at the moment, even if you're just transiting. At the border, what we're seeing is that Customs and Border Protection officers have really significant discretionary powers as to whether to let somebody into the States or not. At the lower end of the scale, the things that trans and gender diverse people might experience are things like intensive questioning at the border, looking through your phone, which they're legally entitled to do. They might simply deny you entry. And from there, it steps up to types of mistreatment, like deliberate misgendering, invasive searches. And, you know, in the absolute worst case scenario, as everybody will be aware, there's been lots of cases where people have been arbitrarily detained at the US border, in some cases for weeks, and often with no explanation given. And we're concerned that trans and gender diverse are particularly at high risk for that.
Yeah, thank you. And going back to X gender markers on passports, Can you tell me a bit more about those and what kind of issues someone carrying an ex-gender passport could encounter, particularly regarding the legislation in the US that adheres to binary gender on visas?
Sure. Well, to start with, it's both people with ex-gender markers on their passports as well as anyone who's updated their gender markers since birth, mm-hmm. because the US government formally now requires travellers to list the gender assigned to them at birth and only provides male and female options. What that means in practice is that you might end up with a mismatch between your passport saying X and any US government documentation like a visa. Airlines are now also barred from providing gender markers to the states, and airlines are dealing with that in different ways. It really depends on the airline. I do want to say the US government might still accept foreign passports with an ex-gender marker. It really comes down to the individual customs and border protection stuff.
Right, and that doesn't sound like a particularly reliable thing to ensure your safety as a trans person, just whoever you happen to get at the border. Now,
no, and that's one of the challenges that people are experiencing is, it's just a bit of a lottery, really, to who you have.
Yeah, because knowing what to expect is such a key part of keeping ourselves safe. So that inconsistency really is a proponent of harm. Now, some trans people experience different types of discrimination and control at the border. In particular, Equality Australia has also flagged changes to legislation that impact trans women seeking extraordinary ability visas, and in particular, trans women athletes. What do women need to know about extraordinary ability visas and the treatment of people seeking those?
The US has a special visa for high-achieving creatives, scientists, athletes and other professionals. And unfortunately, they've now taken steps to specifically exclude trans women athletes from being eligible to receive that visa to go to elite women's sporting events in the US. That doesn't actually apply to other categories, you know, like scientists or creatives, but any trans people who are seeking the type of visa under other categories still face all these other risks that we've been talking about.
Yeah, right. So it's kind of setting the stage for the treatment of trans women seeking extraordinary ability visas, maybe under another skill.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you. Now, jumping to more of a global picture, to understand the global temperature of safety for trans people, are there any other notable laws or changes to legislation that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so I mentioned Malaysia before, and I want to give the example of some of the laws that we're seeing in American states, because, you know, we're seeing this kind of playbook being copied by a lot of countries around the world.
Mm.
So a growing number of American states are introducing anti-trans laws, and some of the laws that might affect travelers in particular include bathroom bans, so some form of ban on using the bathroom that corresponds to your gender. And in a small number of states, there's even legal exemptions that allow medical providers to refuse treatment to LGBTQ+ clients on religious grounds. I would really recommend checking out resources like Erin in the Morning or the Movement Advancement Project to learn more about the specifics of this, because it varies so much from state to state.
Okay, we'll include those resources in our show notes. That's really important information. It's particularly horrifying to think that someone could be denied medical care just for who they are. Now, in terms of trans and gender diverse people that can't opt out of international travel to protect themselves, what are some safety measures that people can take?
Well, there's loads of advice in the document on our website, and obviously, you know, we suggest doing as much research as you can. some of the main tips that we suggest are to consider going through what's called a pre-clearance airport, where you go through a US customs facility in an overseas airport before flying to the States. There's one in Abu Dhabi, there are some in Canada and Ireland. And what that means is that if you are denied entry, at least you're not going to be detained, so it's safer. We really recommend making sure that a trusted contact, like a family member or a friend, knows that you're traveling, is contactable, mm-hmm. has a copy of your itinerary and so on, and is aware of these risks. And then also, if you are detained, it's likely they'll take your phone. So what we're recommending is that people memorize contact details for their trusted contact, US-based immigration lawyer and the local Australian consulate.
Right, or have those written down somewhere, I guess, on your person. Now, was one last thing that I think might be relevant to our listeners here is that there is specific risk for trans and gender diverse people who have a history of activism. Is there anything that you can share about what people could do to protect themselves if they fall into that category of someone that's done a lot of organising and advocacy in the past and might have evidence of those things on their phone?
Yeah. So when it comes to phones, we really say you need to make the decision on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, having a phone that you've wiped or a burner phone is going to look suspicious. And so, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't have anything that's likely to cause concern for the US authorities on your phone in the first place, then we're not recommending that you wipe your phone or have a burner. But if you do have that that history of activism and that content on your phone, then having a secondary phone is, you know, even with secondary social media accounts, is absolutely something that people can consider. But they do have the right to go through your phone at the border.
Yeah. Sav, thank you so much for your time and insights today. I hope you have a great morning. We've really enjoyed having you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bye. You just heard from Equality Australia Senior Advisor Sav Tanchuran. Sav is a social justice practitioner and international human rights expert who's worked across government and civil society for over a decade. Today, we spoke about the current travel risks for trans and gender diverse people globally, as well as recent changes to US border security protocols. This is Thursday Breakfast, and you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
Quando sono solo in casa e solo devo restare.
Benvenuti, benvenuti al programma Radio Filet.
Mercoledì pomeriggio dalle 18:30 alle 19:30.
And for those who don't speak Italian, that's Wednesday evening, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m.
You'll hear from multi-generational Italian voices coming together to connect and learn and discuss Italian culture.
And politics.
And politics.
Radio File, building bridges between the diaspora.
The program will be part in Italian, part in English, so
practice your Italian or hone your listening skills.
Radio File, la voce alternativa della comunità italiana a Melbourne.
Tune in to 3CR, 855 AM, or you can listen online, 3cr.org.au.
Radio Filef.
Hi.
I'm Jeffrey.
I'm Alphonse.
I'm Erwin.
And we are from the Voice of West Papua.
Tuesday 6:30 until 7:30 p.m.
News and music from West Papua.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And if you're just catching up with the show, earlier on we heard some speeches and vox pops from the Australian Education Union's teachers' strike outside Parliament on Tuesday. We heard from Lily, who's a member of the Lift Collective and fundraising working group of Catalyst Social Centre, about the centre's fundraiser to fit out their new space. And we just heard from Sav Tancharan from Equality Australia about increased travel risks for trans and gender diverse people heading to or through the United States. And now we are joined by Narm-based musician, DJ, writer, artist, educator, and organizer Slumby to talk about this Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance rally, which will be held outside the State Library of Victoria at 4 p.m. on the 28th of March. Organisers are demanding accessible gender-affirming care for all, cops and Zionists out of pride, and no pride in detention. Good morning, Slumby.
Good morning. It's so great to be back on 3CR Thursday Breakfast.
It's always a delight to talk to you. So I wanted to kick the conversation off by talking about the importance of rallying on Trans Day of Vengeance and resisting, you know, just this flat notion of visibility by actually practicing, you know, public dissent against the annihilation of trans public life.
Yeah. Well, it's really fun. It doesn't have to be a whole bunch of hard work. In fact, there's lots of young trans people involved in organising these rallies these days, which is fantastic. And they're still really new. Like, it was, I think, 2018 when we organised the first rally for Trans Day Visibility and Trans Day of Remembrance / Resistance. And so these rallies are still quite new. And for a long time, there was only like 150 people, 200 people. They were kind of small. In the last couple of years, they've gotten much bigger. So this rally last year in 2025, there was around 3,000 people. So it's really great to see more people coming to these rallies, but often it's mostly like young trans people who are really scared about the future prospects for trans life. And so it would be really great to see everybody come down, like other queers, but also just anyone who wants to come and support trans and gender diverse people in this moment in which we're under attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, something that is always so striking to me is that I see particularly young trans femmes showing up for everyone, and we need people to come show up for trans folks. You know, it is, it's about leaning into the connections that already bind us to each other, and, you know, implicate us in each other's lives. And on that, I wanted to ask about, you know, connecting trans liberation to a whole lot of different political struggles, including anti-colonial and anti-imperialist politics, and how that's sort of enlivened in this Saturday's rally.
Yeah, well, as a lot of people probably know, like, gender is something that we all experience in the world, even the most gender-conforming, cisgendered men and women to still have to live in this patriarchal, binary, Western capitalist gender system. And that reduces the scope of possibility for everybody. And, you know, some of the most violent expressions of that is through policing, prisons, war and genocide, which we're just seeing governments really detour into so much at the moment. And obviously policing, prisons, war, genocide, these things at the intersections of colonialism, at the intersections of white supremacy, impact trans and gender-diverse people extra. But undoing this system and unravelling this system can only benefit everybody. So everybody has a stake in it, and everybody is impacted by policing and prisons and war through the ways, not just that it constructs and fuels patriarchal binary gender, but in all kinds of, obviously, I don't think there's anyone who's unaffected by the current war in Iran, the US war of aggression on Iran, through the cost of living, just as one really obvious example. But every time there is laws created that further criminalize people's lives, it reduces the scope for the possibility of life within the gender realm. It reduces the scope of possibility of, like, what one could be as a woman and what one can be as a man, regardless of what gender you were assigned at birth. But obviously it particularly impacts trans and gender diverse people. And at the moment, where we just heard the report from Equality Australia, anti-trans policies are on the rise, and we also see on the ground an increase in transphobia. But that also increases instances of homophobia and misogyny and classism and racism. It's not like by allowing trans and gender-diverse people to be attacked, we then somehow absolve ourselves of, take ourselves out of the target sites, the firing line. Whatever impacts trans and gender-diverse people goes on to impact everybody in society. It reduces the scope of possibility for any kind of life within society.
Totally. And, like, trans liberation is an expansive project, you know, as you mentioned, disrupting the violent status quo can only benefit everyone. I mean, I'm thinking as well about legislative changes, not just in the West, but across other places, you know, India's, I think India's Supreme Court, was it a Supreme Court ruling or was it a government decision? Anyway, there was a decision in India yesterday or the day before about, you know, the legitimization of gender categories. And there has been a severe restriction on trans and gender diverse legitimate gender identity in India, which is really, you know, it parallels so many trends we're seeing here and across so many other places, and challenging this really benefits us all. And I wanted to, I guess, ask you before we wrap up with reference to the action about, you know, what trans liberation can offer for rethinking this concept of safety and community in a violent cis heteropatriarchal world that is beyond the sort of repressive architectures of the state, but also beyond, you know, thin liberal inclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a critique there of government-funded NGOs and organizations, particularly where they're connected to political parties. Like, there's a huge issue with this and LGBT organisations in Australia and the ways in which they're connected to the Labor Party. which is ostensibly meant to be some kind of left-wing, but it is often supportive or not critical of genocide, for example, and really waters down what trans and gender diverse people on the ground are saying that we need and what we're demanding. But also I think, like, anti-trans policies don't work as well. And I think often we get stuck in this sort of, like, doom space of, like, oh, we're in the firing line at the moment and everything is terrible. But, like, we've seen anti-trans moments before in the past, and you mentioned India and this latest wave of anti-trans policies. But India was one of the first places, you know, 170 years ago, to introduce anti-trans laws to try and eradicate the Hijra population. Mm. And that is a population of people who continue to exist to this day. So those laws were not successful in eliminating that population. And often we see anti-trans policies act as a catalyst to bring community together, to focus our strategies and our energies to clarify what we need to survive and to thrive in the world. And I think that the possibilities for trans life are still very much there, and can really be brought into sharper focus during an anti-trans moment. So I'd encourage everyone not to get too not to become pessimistic about the possibility for trans life, because it's also more possible than ever, particularly in Australia, where thankfully we're seeing quite minimal anti-trans policies, and in fact, on the other hand, we're seeing access to HRT and all kinds of different gender-affirming care, but also employment and so many things. The possibility of trans life on this continent, at least, has never been greater.
Yeah. I mean, and I want to, you know, acknowledge the fact that while we are seeing sort of repressive measures in places like Queensland, and we are seeing, you know, the ongoing churn of right wing but also centrist nonsense about trans lives. I want to return to that point that you made about the spaces of possibility that we create and open up and keep bringing into being by coming together and resisting this annihilation. I also wanted to make a correction to what I'd said earlier about India. So this was the Transgender Persons Protection of Rights Amendment Bill 2026, which was just passed on the 25th of March. So it was a bill passed by Parliament, and it does make some significant changes to gender categories or legitimate legal recognition of those categories. Now, just to wrap up, Slemi, can you tell us about how people can get involved on Saturday?
Yeah, so on Saturday, actually, Trans Day of Visibility is on Tuesday, on the 31st of March, but the rally is on Saturday, the 28th, and it's from 4 p.m. at the State Library, and I think there's another rally happening before it, organised by the Latin American Solidarity Network. So you can get two for one on Saturday afternoon in terms of rallies, and if the weather's really nice, it's definitely going to be the place to be. Come down. The last rally was really big, but as I mentioned, the main way that you can support is just to come down and attend the rally. There's like going to be beautiful speeches by trans and gender diverse people sharing all kinds of information and experiences with the crowd, and you can come down, listen to the speeches, and march through the streets with us all. That's probably the main way, because, you know, there's whole collectives of trans and gender diverse people organising these rallies these days, which is just so, so fantastic. But really in this moment, we need to see people there.
Yes.
And you don't have to be trans to go.
Importantly, you should go if you are not trans. Like,
yeah.
These rallies are for everyone, and, you know, by centering and amplifying trans life, as you mentioned before, as we've been talking about, like, everyone benefits. Everyone benefits from breaking down these binaries and gender policing and restrictions on the kind of ways that we can inhabit our bodies and be in the world. So thank you so much, Slumby. I really appreciate you making the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Enjoy your day. You too. And that was Slumby, who joined us to talk about this Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance rally, which is going to be held outside the State Library of Victoria at 4 p.m. on the 28th of March. And for more information and updates, you can follow trans.action.network and transqueersolly 2026 on Instagram. And now we are joined in studio by our final guest of the day, the incomparable Tilda Joy, 2025 winner of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia's Jane Brownrigg Award for Outstanding Volunteer Contribution, and host of 3CR's Slacker Radio Show, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Fridays, 855 on your AM dial. And Tilda is speaking with us about next Tuesday's Trans Day of Audibility special broadcast.
Yay. Incomparable. Love that.
Incomparable. I wrote this last night. I was like, what is a fitting introduction for Tilda?
Well, comparison is the assassin of joy, so.
It's true.
Yeah.
But imitation is the greatest form of flattery. And so I would like to bring some of your volunteer spirit to my own work at 3CR.
Too sweet.
This is already a great start to this conversation. So next Tuesday, we are having 3CR's, what is this? What number is this?
We're on our fifth now.
We're on our fifth. Fifth Day of Audibility broadcast, going from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the 31st. And it's 8 hours of all trans, non-binary, gender diverse sound, wall to wall.
Wall to wall, yeah. Our longest one yet.
Yeah. So how did it sort of start off? What was, how did you scale up over time?
How did we scale up over time? Well, our first one was actually in 2021, which, if you do the maths, it should be our sixth year, right? But we...
I can't do the maths.
Too early for maths.
And I'm not.
If you count it out on your hand,
yes.
Whatever. I've counted it for you.
Okay,
trust
thank
me.
Thank you.
We started in 2021, and it was a little call out that went out, like, "Hey, we're looking at doing something for Trans Day Visibility. Does anyone kind of want to get involved?" And that kind of thing. And the first couple of years were a funded project, which was great, and we felt wonderful. We were able to put some money in the wallets of some trans people, which was really, really great. And then what happened in 2023, we didn't have any funding. It was like, oh, well, I guess we can't do it then.
Yeah. Can we actually be trans without funding?
Can we be? Yeah. And we didn't get those Soros bucks at all. And so we didn't have one in 2023, got funded again in 2024, 2025 rolled around. And it's like, we haven't got funding. And I thought to myself, do we need funding? ? If anyone who controls the funding is listening, yes.
Yes, we
yes,
do.
We do.
Any wealthy benefactors that are listening at the moment, call us during business hours on 03-9419-8377 and let us know if you want to make a donation to run Trans Day of Audibility.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, no, we don't actually need to get paid to do this kind of thing around here. We can make it happen just out of elbow grease and effort and that kind of thing. And so I guess, yeah, this is our second year where it's been a volunteer effort, but we have had, I don't know, some great participation over the years. We've had some wonderful live acts coming in, and this year we've got like 3 hours basically of music content, which I love. And 3 live acts lined up, which is all a volunteer effort as well. You know, that was part of it. It's like, oh, we won't be able to pay artists to come in and play. Turns out trans artists like this idea and want to be involved.
Yeah, really?
So I'm really, really grateful to the people who are coming along. We've got Ev Morris, playing on a special episode of Music Matters. We've got Heather Vomiting God. Heather's a member of LXRP, but this is like her jungle project, so that's going to be sick as hell, I've got to say. And then we've got Blood of a Pomegranate.
Just casually.
Blood of a Pomegranate, kind of Armenian folk / noise project. Longtime friend of the station and friend of myself.
friend to all.
Yeah. So really pumped about that kind of side of things because, yeah, a lot of the time these Trans Day of Visibility kind of efforts are, you know, it's really serious. It's really heavy being a trans person. We're living in a an age of reaction, but also we've got to remember the good stuff and the like cultural aspects of being trans and what trans people do to, you know, stay alive and happy and like full people totally. Living their full lives, which includes some banging tunes, it turns out.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm going to be, for the segment that I'm doing, my darling friend Willow and I are doing a little breakdown on the evils of Turf Island, which many people would say is this island, but actually is the United Kingdom, is the original.
We're like a side project.
We're kind of a side project. We're kind of a little turf offshoot. But I think, you know, what I'm hoping that people will get from it is the fact that Willow and I just like cannot stop laughing all the time. We haven't even recorded this and I'm already thinking about how much we're going to be laughing because usually my conversations with Willow are talking about like the most awful, awful things related to trans stuff and like crying laughing. So, yeah.
It's, you know, one of the best ways to cope, I think, is, you know, ironic detachment. Not too much.
No.
A little bit. But yeah, I'm really happy with how it's kind of shaping out because we've got, you know, some serious kind of stuff like what you're talking about. We've got some new presenters coming in just talking about, you know, one's my old dear friend Antimony, who is covering like the significance of trans people's names and how we choose our names and stuff. And that looks like it's going to be a really fun one. We've got a brand new programmer, Katie, who's doing an hour-long special with talking about experiences of coming out as a trans woman of a certain vintage, let's say, with friends from the US and the UK and that kind of thing. So yeah. There's a really, really broad spectrum. We've got the Trans Creator Radio also happening, Madison's thing, which is also always about, you know, creativity and creating our own culture separate from the mainstream, you know, hegemonic patriarchal culture out there.
And we've got the amazing Sally Goldner's Out of the Pan. And Sally had a big milestone.
21 years young, babe.
21 years of radio involvement for Sally, which is massive,
yeah. So we've got brand new programmers right over to veteran programmers. Also, I'd be remiss not to mention Rob from Monday Brekkie talking about like trans fitness and, you know, the gendered ways that lifting bro, like bro question mark, is it always a bro what lifts?
Is it always a bro what lifts? Many people are asking.
Yeah. I love a muscle mummy myself.
I think you're in good company here. Yeah, Muscle Mummies, call the station on 03-941-98377.
Right now.
Yeah. Right now.
Yeah, leave us your number.
Call, say it's for Tilda.
Please. Yeah. Yes. So it's going to be so fun. And yeah, I'm so proud with how it's like turned out. The other thing that I should mention is that we have like a bit of a culinary aspect to this year's... What are we going to call it?
Proceedings.
Proceedings. Thank you. That was what I was reaching for. Yeah. We're having a little potluck at the station. Nice. So friends at the station of a trans variety are invited to come along, bring a plate, hang out. We're doing like COVID precautions this time as well, which I love, you know. there's a strong crossover between, you know, disabled people and trans people. And I love that our community has kind of stepped up and said, like, hey, can we do this? Can we have masks in the station today? And like, yes, we can. Of course we can. This is easy.
Thursday breakfast, big fan of COVID protocols and big fan of Tran.
Yeah.
And just to wrap up, can you remind people again how they can tune in and how they can drop in?
Well, you can swivel your AM radio dial over to 855 AM between the hours of 10 AM and 6 PM this coming Tuesday, the 31st. Tuesday, the 31st of March, 8 hours of wonderful transgendered radio. And you can also find us afterwards at 3cr.org.au/TDOA26.
Yeah, 2026.
Yeah.
It's 2026. Oh my goodness, and actually, okay. Last year and the years before, it was all Transgender Day of Solidarity in the URL. So I'm glad we've gone just to TDOA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
It'll
so
be
much
shorter Taylor. Next year, I promise.
Yes, every year it'll get shorter. It'll just be T.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring you efficient trans programming.
Mm.
Now, we are coming up to the end of our show, so thank you very much, Tilda.
Total pleasure.
Yes, thank you, Tilda.
And just a reminder, today you heard some speeches from the AEU's teachers' strike outside Parliament on Tuesday. You heard from Lily on Catalyst Social Centre's New Space fundraiser. We also heard from Sav Tancharan from Equality Australia about risks in travelling for trans and gender diverse people, in particular transiting through the United States or travelling to it. We heard from Slumby about this Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance rally, which is outside the State Library of Victoria at 4 p.m. on the 28th of March. And finally, from Tilda. And we will catch you next week on Thursday Breakfast. Bye.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.